Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly. This is episode number 112, and I am your host, Dr. Venkman. And then joining us today on our panel, we have Mazer.
I feel like that you almost announced my name, and it was like an interesting call to arms. Is there something I should be doing?
if you're feeling something,
I don't know. I don't know.
No, you're not feeling it.
I don't have any weapons around me. I could dig back.
I know for a fact that you have a 1930s ray gun behind you and two discs from Tron.
Yeah, I've got two identity discs. Let's see, I've got a bunch of lightsabers.
Yes.
I have batarangs. They're very sharp. What else do I have around?
Yeah, don't tell me you don't have any weapons. It's a lie. Also joining us tonight, we have Ben P. What's up, Ben?
Hey, man. Not too much. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. What's your weapon of choice tonight?
I've been scoping my room ever since Mazer started mentioning that. I figured you would ask me that.
Because if someone comes into your apartment mm-hmm. and is going to attack you, mm-hmm. what do you have to protect yourself?
I'm gonna have to El Kabong somebody with the acoustic guitar that I have in my room.
Awesome. Perfect. That's great. Tiberius is also joining us. Hello.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. And what would you use as a weapon on this evening?
I have some mad nunchuck skills, and I would definitely be utilizing that along with some throwing stars, which I don't have, but I would be using them.
Okay.
That's great. I've got a 35-pound kettlebell that I'll just throw at somebody's head.
Actually, I've got that one, too. It's actually within arm's reach, so.
That's just a solid weapon that can just take someone out with nothing.
You get winded after you throw it, though.
Yeah, sure. But you only need one throw before you take out the person invading your home, so. That's how we do it here. All right. Now that you know how to defend yourself from home invaders with household items laying around, let's move into some box office numbers, shall we?
Yes.
Real quick, we're just going to go through the top five. Rio, the animated film from Fox CG, comes in at number one at $39.2 million. That's a lot of money for an opening animated film that really didn't look that good. Just saying. Anybody see that by any chance?
Nope.
No.
I know. I did not.
Wow. All right. Well, there you have that. Scream 4 came in at number 2 at $18.6 million. We'll talk about that later. Number 3, Hop, came in at $10.7 million. Number 4, Hannah, $7.2 million. And running at the top 5, Soul Surfer, brought in $7.2 million as well. So that's your top 5 for this last weekend. And I don't know. Pretty low weekend. The Rio surprised me with those numbers, but now I'm sure we'll see a sequel sometime in the future.
Yeah, I think it's just that time, you know, right before the summer movie season kind of officially begins with Fast Five at the end of this month. So
exactly,
doesn't surprise me. It's kind of a down week.
It is. So. Anyway, before we get into talking about some of the movies we saw this week, we are going to play our game of Connect 3. And I believe Mazer has the questions today.
All right. So, I'll be giving you guys 3 clues, and you have to guess what it is. It's going to be entertainment-related. So.
I hope so.
Saturday Night Live.
Will Ferrell.
Robot Chicken.
Hmm.
The Simpsons.
interesting. Conan O'Brien.
There you go.
Nice.
Yes. Yes. I got one right.
Nicely done.
Okay. That was a good one. Munich. Lara Croft, Tomb Raider. And Road to Perdition.
Ooh. Oh, shoot. I know this one, I think.
Jude Law, Daniel Craig, Sam Mendes.
Daniel Craig.
Oh, wow. Okay.
All right. So this one may throw you guys off, but we'll see. All right. Sam Worthington.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Willis.
Hmm.
Nicolas Cage.
Ah.
Wow. McG.
No.
See, what does Nicolas Cage have to do with either one of those people? Because it was Dog the Bounty Hunter that just bailed him out of jail in Vegas. Or was it Hawaii? I think it was Vegas.
Let's see.
I don't know.
Louis Leterrier?
Nope.
Man.
Is it
a director?
Ron Perlman?
It is an actress.
Actress.
Oh.
Not.
Wait. Moon Bloodgood.
No.
Oh.
Eva Mendes.
No.
Sam Worthington hasn't been in that many movies, guys. We should be able to figure this out.
I will say the one with Sam Worthington, this movie's not actually... It's actually coming out soon.
Kate Blanchett?
No.
What's her name?
Jessica?
Helen Mirren. All right.
There we go.
Oh. All right.
Yeah,
so,
okay, so I follow you.
The movie that Helen Mirren is with Sam Worthington is it's actually The Debt. Nicolas Cage is Red, and Bruce Willis is Red, and Nicolas Cage is National Treasure.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
I forgot that she was even in National Treasure.
Nice. So,
there you are.
Good one.
Yeah, those were good. Awesome. All right. So why don't we talk about some reviews, shall we? Or review.
Yeah.
There was only one movie that the majority of us saw this week, and that was Scream 4.
Robert's residence.
Welcome home, Sydney. You're a survivor, aren't you, Sydney? What good's it to be a survivor if everyone close to you is dead? You can't save them. All you can do is watch.
Modern audiences have become savvy to the rules of the originals. I mean, there are still rules, but the rules have changed.
And the kill's gotta be, like, way more extreme.
The unexpected is the new cliche.
And virgins can die now.
To be the new version, you know, 2.0, the killer should be filming the murders.
That's a natural next step in psycho-slasher innovation.
Go ahead if you have the guts.
Well, it's time for someone new to die.
These aren't just random killings.
There's something really scary about a guy with a knife who just snaps.
From what I've seen, I think all of us have some pretty different opinions on the matter. So let's get into it, guys. Scream 4. First of all, let me just start out that I'm a fan of the franchise. I enjoyed the first three movies. I'm a big fan of them. Going into Scream 4, I had, pretty high expectations for what what was coming. I knew it was going to be ridiculous. I knew, because, you know, if you've seen the other Scream movies, you know kind of what you're getting into when you go to a, you know, one of these movies. And it met all my expectations. I enjoyed the hell out of this movie. I thought it was awesome. And I don't know. I know all of you aren't going to agree with me, but I thought it was a really solid, fun piece of horror movie filmmaking.
All right, Tiberius, let's go. What did you think about that movie?
Okay. I actually also enjoyed it, but it definitely wasn't something that lived up to the hype that I was expecting about the film. The cast was really solid. And I like the death scenes. I like the amount of blood. I really didn't care personally for what everyone seems to be liking, which is the opening sequence as much. There were aspects of it that I did without giving any that I did enjoy. I don't want to give any spoilers away, but I mean,
let's just put this out on the line right now, everybody.
Okay.
We're going spoilers on this, so I don't want to hold back anything when I'm talking about this movie.
Okay,
so
that's fine.
Everyone's been warned.
Okay, well, I didn't like how there were multiple opening sequences. I thought that was completely lame. I wish there had just been the very first fake one had been. I wish that had not been part of the film. It didn't really need to be. I mean, I don't think. And I wish that they would have started with the Anna Paquin sequence as the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't like the very first opening sequence. And
I love the multiple opening sequences. It set the movie up for what the movie was going to become. Do you know what I mean? It had to happen that way because it kind of showed the ridiculousness of the multiple sequels and reboots that are happening in movies these days.
I didn't analyze it that far. I just thought it was kind of broke. I thought it broke the flow of the film. And they already did really enough of that with the majority of the story in the middle of the film. So, I mean, I don't think it was necessary to really, you know, they overly poked fun at it then. Looking back on it is what I'm going with. So.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. But I
did like the blood. I did like the kill scenes. I thought Emma Roberts was great. Hayden Panettiere was great as well. So that's about it, though.
All right, Ben, let's hear it.
Dude, I mean, I feel I feel bad because I feel like I've gotten this reputation as like the old, like the bitter old man of this podcast, even though I'm probably younger than any of you guys on here. But, like, I feel like I'm the neighbor in the Sandlot that all the kids are afraid of just because I'm so, like, crotchety and everything all the time. But, like, this movie, I kind of hated it. Like, it just doesn't – it's, like, it doesn't work as a horror movie, and it's way too meta for its own good. Like, the reason it doesn't work as a horror movie is because it's constantly pointing out every single thing that every other horror movie does. And it doesn't, like, it gets so bogged down in being self-referential that it's no fun. Like, horror movies are either supposed to be scary or fun, right? Am I right? Can we agree on this? Like,
sure.
Legitimately frightening or kind of fun in like a Drag Me to Hell type of way, maybe, or something like that, you know, just as an offhanded example, right? Is everybody good on that?
Yeah, okay. we're good.
So I just didn't think that, okay, clearly this movie isn't scary, right? Can we all agree on that, too? It's not, yeah, like, legitimately frightening.
No, it wasn't scary, but at the same time...
It was genuinely scary, no.
Right.
I went to a midnight screening for it, and the audience that was there were scared.
I think there's a difference.
Jumping, screaming, laughing. I mean, everyone in that theater was having a great time watching the movie.
Yeah.
But of course, it was a midnight screening, and midnight screenings, all the hardcore fans go out to see it.
Sure.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I saw it with a group of fans that were just ready to see Scream 4, and, you know, all of them ate it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can see that, and I can see how kind of it would play to an audience well like that, and especially with the opening scenes and stuff like you guys were already talking about. But I just think as a horror movie, if it's not going to be legitimately frightening, it needs to be fun, and I had no fun in this movie because it just takes itself far too seriously in like trying to trick the audience into thinking into overthinking things, you know, I'm going to quote from my review, right? So here we go. It wears the audience down to the point of abuse, blindsiding our notions of what's about to happen, and then instantly blindsiding the blind side just to keep us off balance. Like, that's what this movie is.
That's what was so great.
But
what I loved about it.
But it just seemed so cheap to me. Like, anybody can make a movie like that where it's just cheap tricks and, like, oh, gotcha, we said we're going to do this, but we're doing something else, and aren't we so clever, ha ha ha. Like, it's not fun when the movie is treating itself as, like, a superior thing to the audience. It's just, it's looking down on us and treating us like garbage. Like, okay, you guys are so stupid that you didn't see this coming, but there's no possible way you could have seen it coming, because it's so...
I didn't feel that way at all.
Oh, man.
I thought... They weren't treating the audience stupid at all. The audience know, like, the movie was made for the fans of the franchise. Honestly, if you really aren't like a fan of the Scream franchise, and you know, you're not going to be a fan of Scream 4. If you didn't see the first three movies, you're not going to like Scream 4 because you really don't know what you're getting yourself into. You don't have that feeling of, you know, because Screams 1, 2, and 3 kind of followed the same type of stuff, but in this one, they just took it to a level where they implemented more of what's happening with horror films 10 years later type thing.
Yeah, that's all they did. You know, there's nothing new in this film. There really isn't.
What I think one of my favorite aspects about this movie, one of the best things about it was the fact that when we first started hearing reports that it was being made, and we started hearing like, oh, it's going to be a reboot, they're bringing in this whole new cast of young actors, and they're going to carry on the franchise, and they're going, you know, and then we're going to get a Scream 5 and a Scream 6 with this new cast that they're bringing in to, you know, to pass the torch. And what I loved about this movie is going into it, I mean, that's the mindset that I had, that they were going to pass the torch to this younger generation. I was just going to hope that they did it right. And so when I'm going through this movie and every single one of these kids, these teenage kids that they brought in to, you know, reboot the franchise, they all got killed off. Not one of these new actors that were brought into this movie to pass the torch to survived. They all died.
Mm-hmm.
I love that about this movie because they didn't. It was like the movie didn't. the fourth Scream film didn't allow itself to be rebooted. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the only bit that I think worked well in the movie. That's the only thing where that's the only kind of surprising thing about the movie is that you're right. It does set it up as this kind of thing, oh, passing the torch, and then it clearly can't do that because all these characters are dead by the end. So yeah, I did kind of appreciate that, but I don't know. I think
I found one thing. That's all I needed.
And I'm sorry, maybe I didn't think this. I mean, I had no idea who – I thought it was actually the boyfriend. And I'm not an idiot when I go into a movie, but maybe I was in this case. I did not see where the real killer – I did not see that coming.
Oh, no. I mean, that's the thing, like, with Wes Craven, I think, in most of these movies, he does a pretty good job of like, throwing out a bunch of different – you know, it's like a glorified Scooby-Doo episode, basically. You know, it's like a bunch of – characters that could be the one, and you're not an idiot if you think it's any of them. You know, they do a pretty good job of making all of them, you know, potentially believable as the killer. So I don't think,
yeah,
you
know,
true.
I don't think there's anything like that going on. But I do, because personally, I thought it was Marlee Shelton's character for a little while. the kind of doe-eyed
Judy?
Cop. Yeah, the Judy,
yeah,
I think, right?
Yeah, she was standing in the dark in the shadows.
Yeah, I kind of thought it was her for a majority of the movie. So, I don't know, man. I couldn't get behind this because I think, I don't know, as much as this movie wants to be progressive and wants to, like, rewrite the genre conventions and, like, comment on all these things and be this, like, hip thing, it's like, oh, it's been 10 years since the last one and horror movies have changed so much, so let's put a kid in high school with a webcam on his head all the time because that's what kids are doing nowadays, and, like, these are the cool things, this is, like, the hip, this is what's going on, these kids are plugged in, man. It's like all this crap. It's like, come on, give me a break. Nobody does that. Nobody goes around and broadcasts their entire high school experience. Like, if you're trying to be, you know, this movie is kind of, this franchise, from what I understand, like I said, I haven't seen the, or I don't know if I did say that, actually, I haven't seen Scream 2 or Scream 3. I kind of dug the first one, but you know, this franchise, from what I understand, has not really made a mark from its, like, supernatural elements or whatever. It's always been, like, a realistic killer, you know?
Yeah.
It's been, like, more of a realistic
exactly.
franchise. So why would you, if you're aiming for realism, why would you have a kid with a freaking webcam attached to his head recording his every move? That makes no sense. And then, like...
Well, if you even want to go further, then how is this 16-year-old girl going around kicking people's asses
right.
the whole movie?
Yeah, and that, too.
Yeah,
like, that's the kind of stuff...
Point.
That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about, where the movie tricks you into... thinking that it's somebody else, and also with the whole double killer thing, like, I'm pretty sure this franchise has dipped into that kind of territory before, am I right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's always been a double killer.
Okay.
Every movie is kind of had the double kill.
Yeah.
Killer thing going, so.
But, I don't know, I just, like, because it, because of that exact thing that you just said, Minkman, like, it's, you know, it implies that Ghostface is, like, way more powerful than a freaking 16-year-old girl could be, and she, like, kicks Dewey's ass in the hospital room at the end, and I'm like, what? There's no way. He's a trained police officer. Like,
oh,
okay,
that's
the,
he's
an
that's,
idiot.
That's,
well,
but that's the thing. That's, like, I don't know. It's like I'm watching it, and I know that this is not going to happen in real life. I think it's one of those things where it's a commentary on kind of the way that films are going now, where you're having these young kids being able to do ridiculous things, even though you know they aren't going to get away, you know, that in real life that can't happen. I don't know. I mean, I'm probably looking too deep into it, but I just had a fun time watching it.
And you know what? I just want to bring this up though, Ben. Yeah, you know what? The idea of someone actually wearing a webcam around with them is kind of a little bit ludicrous. But the fact is, today's culture, especially teens, you know, everyone wants instant gratification and instant, you know, people are recording everything from concerts to sex tapes on webcam now. I mean,
yeah.
So my point being that it's a prevalent thing in society. So I think it was it made sense, but it didn't make sense that it's on his head. I thought that was kind
yeah,
of lame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know, as an overall concept, including that in I think it made sense in that way. So I didn't give it a fault for that.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that, I mean, that could just be like a personal issue that I have with it. There's a lot of things that I have that I just didn't care for in this movie. Just like, I guess maybe it's a lot of it is probably just, I don't know, maybe it is, Venkman, like you said, that I just don't have, like, the history with this franchise that you guys do, but I don't know. I've read some other reviews. Vince at Film Drunk, I'm pretty sure he's seen all of them. He hated the movie,
I read
too.
That.
So,
I know, I read what he wrote.
I was kind of like every single thing that he wrote, I was like, yes, 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 yes. So, for, I guess, an alternate take from Venkman, check out Vince's review over at filmdrunk.com, but, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there was just, like, so much of this movie just seemed to be trying so hard to trick the audience and to like, be this really super smart commentary. But when you take a step back and look at what actually happens in the movie, I think Tiberius alluded to this in the very beginning, there's nothing new that happens here at all. So it's, like, why even make this movie if you're not going to, if you're just going to spend the entire time talking about what happens in horror movies but not add anything new to it, to the genre at all, then what's the point of even making the movie?
Let's watch Sidney Prescott kick some ass again, man.
Yeah.
Come on.
Like I said, she survived. She lived. Emma Roberts was great, man.
I enjoyed Emma Roberts' performance as well. I thought everyone in the cast did a great job. But the one thing I will tell you, the one thing that bugged me in the movie the most is looking at Courtney Cox. She's had so much work done on her face that it annoyed the hell out of me.
She annoys me, period. I can't stand her.
Every scene she was in, I'm like, just get her off. Get her off the screen. Move along.
Like, the whole way that those older characters were written into this just kind of, I don't know, it seemed really desperate to me. Like, they were all, Gail Weathers, Courtney Cox, is just, like, sitting there with writer's block, and just, of course, when Ghostface comes back, she just gets this, like, renewed vigor of, like, oh, this is what I'm good at, solving these murders and stuff. So, like, what are we supposed to believe that happens to her after Ghostface is gone? She just wallows away in self-pity. Like, she can't live as a character unless Ghostface is around killing somebody. Like, she can't be an operational human being. And then, like,
exactly.
Dewey is just, like, this idiot, bumbling, retarded cop who's just, like, stumbling through, and he has no idea what's going on about anything. And then Sydney is just, like, she's written this whole book and, you know, supposedly changed her persona about, you know, being empowering and all this stuff, but it's just the same exact thing that happens in the first movie, basically. So, and I don't know, you guys were talking about how great Emma Roberts was. I found her, like, borderline unwatchable. I thought she was awful in this movie. Yeah. I could not stand her performance. Hayden Panettiere, I will give you, was kind of amusing to watch, if for no other reason than just her, like, ridiculous pixie haircut, but
Don't tell me you didn't think it was great when Emma Roberts beat the hell out of herself.
That was awesome, man.
I laughed, sure, but I
sure, great, see?
Great? I don't know, Venkman. That's a bit strong. I laughed at a lot of this movie. I'm not going to try to say that this is like a just go with it for me, where I just sat there straight faced the entire time. It was like, oh, this is horrible, blah, blah, blah. I laughed a lot. I mean, I kind of liked the opening for what it was and how stupid and ridiculous it was. But I just mean, if you take that a step back and look at the movie as a whole, I found it really kind of like borderline insulting. I didn't appreciate the tone of the film. And I thought a lot of it was just so cheap, and all the scares were jump scares, and all the score, you know, the score practically doesn't exist unless it comes up with like these really fast violins or whatever, like right as the
thing. Dude, you have not seen Scream 2 and 3, so hey, come on. This is the movie. Nothing's new. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Does me not seeing those two movies completely discount my opinion of this one as a whole?
No, no.
I don't think it should.
No, it doesn't.
In terms of you making that point, in terms of the music coming up and only existing because of that, and I don't know. Just that's how it is.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, if you've seen from what it sounds like if you would have seen Scream 2 and Scream 3, you probably would have hated Scream 4 even more.
That's what I'm getting at.
Because Scream 2 and 3 pretty much recycles itself just differently. You know, it's a different way of telling the story type thing.
And
so,
Timothy Oliphant's in one of them. So.
Yeah. I just mean, like, the point I was making with the score was just, like, jump scare. That it wasn't even really the score. It was just kind of highlighting the point that every single scare in this movie is a jump scare. And it's like, you know, I feel like Wes Craven is a little better than that. I feel like he can actually make a movie.
You haven't seen My Soul to Take That.
No, I have not seen My Soul to Take, thank God. But I have seen Red Eye, and I thought Red Eye was actually a really great movie. Like, I enjoyed the hell out of that movie.
I did too.
So, I mean, I know that he's capable of making a movie that doesn't require just jump scares all the way through. And I guess, I don't know, maybe that's what you're saying, is that that's what this franchise is, and there's no...
Exactly.
there's nothing outside of that in the franchise. Like, there's no, every single scare in the entire Scream franchise has been a jump scare, I guess. So I don't know.
I mean, a big part of it, for the most part, I can't really think of any ones that are not jump scare. You know what I mean? I think that's what really sets it apart from a true horror film. Yeah. You know, as one that constantly sits with you and really bogs you down with truly being a little frightened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it sets it apart from other horror films.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah.
So there's lots of varying different opinions here. So, yeah, I say if you're a fan of the franchise, you're going to like it. And if you're not, then you're not going to like it.
Yep. That's probably true.
So.
Mazer, what are your I know you didn't get to see the movie, but do you care about seeing it? What was your relationship with this franchise?
I was already out on 2 and 3, so 4 just didn't seem like I wanted to go through any more Scream.
Okay.
So I'm glad that you didn't enjoy it, because it saves me some time.
Yeah.
I have other films to watch.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So there you have it. That's Scream 4 and what we thought in a nutshell. All right, so let's kind of go in and talk about some stuff that's going on in the news. There really isn't that much that's happened in the last week. It's just a lot of whatever kind of news. So,
yeah.
But we did kind of just want to touch base on a couple things. Like, we've got there's been a lot of pickup on the Hunger Games casting. What have we got so far?
Elizabeth Banks has been most recently cast. There were two unknown actors, one actor, one actress, recently cast, but that have not really done much work at all aside from this role. So this is a fairly big role for them. And I can't pronounce their names. They're really unique names. So unfortunately, I don't have their names in front of me. But the most recent one was Elizabeth Banks being cast as Effie Trinket. And I'm not too familiar with that character, but I do know, I think Elizabeth Banks is a good actor in addition to any film, really.
Yeah.
I haven't really hated her ever, so.
But. Yep.
Yeah, the two actors they cast today, they really haven't done anything. So, and it probably, it looks like if they're kind of going the way they're going, they're going to fill up the rest of the cast with a lot of lesser known actors and actresses. So.
Well, that's great for them.
I mean, yeah, definitely, definitely. I think it's great for the movie as well. I think it will give you a little bit more. I always find when studios and directors cast more unknown actors, you can kind of connect with the characters a little bit better,
because
you don't know who they are. Where it's like, you know, if you cast Tom Cruise as like Abraham Lincoln or something like that, you're not going to be able to connect with them as much as if, you know, you cast kind of a unknown, I guess. But at the same time, you've got Daniel Day-Lewis playing Abraham Lincoln in Spielberg's movie, and he's awesome.
The difference is Daniel Day-Lewis will absolutely be able to kind of disappear into that character.
Exactly, exactly. That's the reason.
Yeah.
But you get what I'm saying, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Having unknown actors being cast in films, I think just kind of gives the film something genuine to go with. So
yeah, totally.
So it'll be interesting to see how it keeps filling up. Have you guys heard about this Robert Zemeckis film? He's not directing it. He might not be directing it. There obviously is a chance that he might. I kind of hope he does. But he's definitely producing it. It's an R-rated slasher film with gnomes, like garden gnomes. All right, it's just kind of a ridiculous thing. The movie is based on a book called "How to Survive a Garden Gnome Attack: Defend Yourself When the Lawn Warriors Strike, and They Will." So.
Wow.
Oh, man.
It just the idea just is so ridiculous that it's going to be so awesome.
The thing that I can't get through my head is that it's R-rated.
I know.
I think there's going to be actually some good violence and blood. I don't know. I've never read the story, so.
Yeah. I think it's like, we're so used to seeing like a Romeo and Juliet and stuff like out, in theaters recently. It's hard to imagine a complete 180 shift into a slasher gnome movie. I can't even fathom that.
You guys remember Small Soldiers?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what I thought of this. That's what I thought of. The Small Soldiers.
Yeah.
And the book isn't a story. It's an actual survival guide to surviving a gnome attack. Like, they write it as if this is happening on a daily basis. Like, people are being attacked by gnomes, and this is what you need to do to protect yourself.
Okay.
Which is good for people that are being attacked by garden gnomes. Right.
Because they're feisty.
They are feisty. I hate garden gnomes. Oh, it's getting in my face.
Yeah, I'm surprised that Zemeckis is still, still jumping into stuff like this after the utter failure of Mars Needs Moms, jumping into staying into, because this movie is supposed to be like a live action CG combo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm
it's
surprised.
It's like, hey, Roger Rabbit 2. Forget you. I'm doing the slasher gnome film.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at. I'm surprised that he was like, okay, yeah, let's do more animation, even though I've essentially ruined my career doing it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, let me read you like the kind of details of the book real quick. Just a little synopsis. Kind of goes through is there's a new threat in town and it's only 12 inches tall. How to survive a garden gnome attack is the only comprehensive survival guide that will help you prevent, prepare for, and ward off an imminent home invasion by the common garden gnome. Once thought of as harmless as a harmless yard decoration, evidence is mounting that these smiling lawn statues are poised and ready to wreak havoc. The danger is real and it's here. Class 1 gnome slayer and gnome defense expert Chuck Sambuccino has developed a proven system. Assesses, protect, defend, apply for safeguarding property, possessions, and loved ones. Strategies include step-by-step instructions for gnome-proofing the average dwelling, recognizing and interpreting the signs of a gathering horde, and in the event that a secured perimeter is breached, confronting and combating the attackers at close range.
Wow,
that sounds like the horde part sounds kind of interesting. I'm just envisioning literally a horde of garden gnomes about to attack this house where people are held, just holed up in the house. Like, imagine zombies, a zombie horde attack, and instead of a zombie horde, it's a gnome horde, which is interesting, but
I don't know. Do you think that you would be intimidated, Tiberius, if you saw like a horde, even a small horde of garden gnomes just walking up to your front door? Like,
honestly, it probably scared the hell out of me. I'd be like, what is happening?
But if I had an aluminum bat, I'd feel pretty safe.
Yeah,
sure,
yeah.
Sure.
You're like, all right, I'm about to get a workout.
Now, this isn't the only, this won't be the first horror film that Zemeckis has made. I mean, he's made some others, Death Becomes Her. He produced The Frighteners, Demon Night, Bordello of Blood, and House on Haunted Hill. So
was The Frighteners the one with Michael J. Fox?
Yep, Peter Jackson.
That was a great directed. Movie.
Yeah, I really like that one. So yeah, he's kind of had a little experience with horror, and I think it'll be a fun project. I kind of would like to see him direct it, just because I think he needs to direct something that is kind of different from what he has been doing.
Yeah, totally.
So I don't know, but I know that he's been talking about doing a live action film again even though at one point he said he would never go back to that.
Oh, Robert Zemeckis.
Well, if he was successful with the animation, probably.
Yeah, if the animation was successful, great. Yeah. But it really never got that. It never really got any better.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Anyway, let's move on to some kind of video game news that was interesting. I'm not a big fan of Nintendo. I haven't been a fan of Nintendo since the 80s with the original 8-bit Ikari Warriors, whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's
since then, though, Nintendo has kind of gone through phases and stuff, and now they have the Nintendo Wii, which is really kind of, I don't know. I own one, but I never play it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my thing. There's not very many fun games on it. But anyway, Nintendo, the Wii's numbers have been dropping recently. They're not selling as many consoles as they were when it first started.
They were sold out for like 2 years. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. But now their sales are like dropping dramatically, and now apparently, from what I hear, the company's losing money, all that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, obviously Nintendo knew that they had to get into this HD game. You know, you've got Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, which are kind of pretty much ruling the HD gaming market, I guess, at this point. And Nintendo still has yet to do an HD, but rumor has it that they have developed something pretty much a Nintendo HD console, and it's not a Wii HD either. I've been hearing that it's just that it's going to be a completely separate console than the Wii, and that they're also thinking of giving it its own kind of brand name type thing. So it'd be like the Nintendo something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, Nintendo hasn't actually ever released kind of like a sequel to their consoles. They always
reinvented themselves.
And I think that's the problem. I think that brings up a good point. I think that's the problem.
I don't know. They definitely need to get something out there. But I can honestly, it's just I've just kind of been so turned off by Nintendo. I just have not been into it. That if they, you know, when they do come out with this Nintendo HD, I just don't see myself rushing out to go buy it because,
yeah.
You know, I've got an Xbox 360 and a PlayStation 3.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think traditionally Nintendo's, they've always gone towards like the younger markets and stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Exactly.
So but, we're probably not their target audience anymore.
Yeah.
But they're talking about reinventing themselves, though. So they're not saying, I imagine when they say something like that, that they want to kind of be more broad, because now they're talking about doing this HD system so they can take it to third-party developers and distributors, mm-hmm. and so that they can have all the games that the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 have, so they kind of can be included in, you know, all these games that are coming out that they really don't have access to.
Okay. Yeah. I got you.
Well, I think something that's interesting with the Wii and actually every Nintendo console is Sony and Microsoft actually sell each console at a loss. So they're actually losing money for every single console that gets sold, and Nintendo does not. Nintendo actually makes a profit, which means if they're going to release new hardware, if they're going with that business model, that means it's probably just going to be equal to what's out on the PlayStation 3 and the 360. It's not going to leapfrog anything. And then at that point is what makes it really different. And I would only say if it was their first party titles, the stuff that you can't get anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Their legacy library, obviously, right?
So. Yeah.
Because I feel like there's already like the built-in. I feel like the video game console, the consoles have established themselves like in the culture at this point. You know, like you're either I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, if you have an Xbox, you're probably going to stick with Xbox for a while. You know, if you have a PlayStation, you're probably a PlayStation guy or something like that. So I don't really think Nintendo's going to be able to, even if they do release some sort of crazy new thing, be able to really pull over a majority of people from those pre-existing markets. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think one of their major issues, too, that hopefully they kind of get on board with on this new Nintendo HD console is multiplayer gaming, because it sucks.
Is that not really that great on the Wii?
It's like an afterthought.
Yeah, it's like they're not even doing anything with it. So
the last time that Nintendo was really big with multiplayer gaming, well, multiplayer in terms of four players at that at a console, was GoldenEye on the Nintendo 64, but not in terms of the massive multiplayer online situations like Modern Warfare, you know, Call of Duty, Black Ops, that kind of those kind of games that both Xbox and PlayStation 3 are known for, and or any other types of massive multiplayer online gaming.
Yeah, I think you could make a case that Super Smash Bros. Was kind of like right up there with GoldenEye, but I think you're right. I think GoldenEye was probably their height as far as that stuff goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they, it seems like they purposely made it like difficult. Like if you wanted to add a friend on there currently, like you have to get their like Nintendo ID, which is like this super long string. You can't just search for their name or just, they just made it super insanely difficult. The interface is just completely not thought through.
Yeah.
Something that the only thing I could think of with what they're doing is Apple is doing really well with the casual, with the App Store, with the casual market. If Nintendo could launch a store where, you know, people could buy games for $1, $2, $3, which are really good fun games that are developed on Nintendo HD, that might be something that's completely counter to, you know, the big development budgets that are happening. Because I mean, even though Sony and Xbox, I mean Xbox has their Xbox Arcade and stuff like that, but they're still like $3-4.
Mm-hmm.
You can bring that price down even more. I think parents would be happy to pay $2 for a game.
What about what about the concept of like a Nintendo phone? Do you think that's something that is even doable? Like, they could just make a handheld console that's essentially, you know, like a kind of a glorified DS or something that's just capable of making basic phone calls. Like, sure, it's not going to have, like, the full-on app stuff that, like, an iPhone would have, but, like, it would be more of, like, game-centric but also capable of making calls. I think that might be something that, I mean, Nintendo's got, like, a crap ton of money. You know, they could maybe look into something like that, or is that just not even feasible? Mazer, what do you think?
Well, they have to build the whole facilities, like, to design an antenna for your cell phone into something. Like, you have to have a lot of R&D into that and scale up for people for that. I mean, they could, but I don't see what the benefit would be for them. I could see them, like, partnering.
That's what I was just going to say.
I could see them partnering and maybe getting, like, 3G in there. So that, like, because right now, like, you can do Bluetooth gaming, but maybe 3G gaming.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fully wireless. That could be something that might work well, but, you know, that's handheld. So.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, we'll find out what exactly they have planned. Apparently, they're supposed to reveal all this stuff officially at E3 this year. So.
Okay.
We'll see how that all shakes down.
I just want to thank you, Mazer. That was a kind way of saying that I'm an idiot and that's a stupid idea. So,
lastly, just really quick, we just wanted to talk quickly about kind of a new thing that we're launching here at Geek Tyrant. We are starting geektyrant.tv, and pretty much this is one video blog that we're starting, our first video blog, just to kind of test the waters and see how things go. And we're looking at growing it. I got some cool ideas that we're kind of developing. So this is just the first step of making it happen. But we did our first one, our first video blog. We put it up today, Monday the 18th, guys?
Yeah. So if you want to watch it, just go to geektyrant.tv and you'll end up on our YouTube channel. That's where we're going to be. We have our first episode for our first show, which is Rants. Right now, it's just going to be kind of a video version of this, except it's probably going to be under 10 minutes, and it's going to be us maybe just answering a question and then going off on one single topic. So
yeah, we'll take questions from our readers and stuff and answer those questions. So on video, I guess.
And then we'll be developing more shows.
So. Yep.
Cool.
So just look out for that. Got some cool things going down.
Yeah, add geektyrant.tv to your bookmarks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what do we got coming out this week, guys? What movies are you looking forward to?
Not a single one, to be completely and utterly honest.
I'm looking forward to one.
Okay, well, let's name them off real quick. Water for Elephants.
I'm excited for that.
I'm going to go see it.
My wife really wants to see it, and it looks really interesting.
It does. It looks like it'll be a solid movie.
In it, man.
Yeah.
I mean, so I that's a plus right there.
So, I don't know. It looks like it's got a good cast. I like the way it's, kind of they shot it. Story. I don't know. We'll find out. So we got that one. We've got Madea's Big Happy Family. I'm gonna go see that. Sorry, guys. No. Anybody?
Clearly not our demographic.
Nope. Okay, we're moving on to the Bang Bang Club.
Yeah, this is an interesting film. It looks like it hits a pretty kind of serious. It jumps around a serious topic, but I don't know.
That's only in limited release, though, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And then we have Legend of the Fist, The Return of Chen Sen. Anybody?
Yeah, so this is kind of like a mix between like a remake of Fist of Legend.
Oh, I love Fist of Legend.
And kind of like The Black Mask.
Oh, I love Fist of Legend.
And, I mean, Black Mask being, Bruce Lee's character from The Green Hornet, Kato. Yeah. So it's kind of all like this weird mash 'em up mix / remake. And the trailer looks really, really cool. So
nice. I'm going to watch Fist of Legend again tonight. Love that movie. All right. And then we've got Morgan Spurlock?
Spurlock.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. The greatest movie ever sold. Did you see this at Sundance, Ben?
No, I did not.
I don't know if you saw it. I didn't see it either. Have you read the reviews on it?
I've heard
people are saying it's
interesting. I mean, I've heard it's like kind of it's a movie about making a movie, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. But it's been getting like these incredibly like good reviews. I mean, there's a lot of blogs out there that are really talking this movie up. And I watched the trailer for it and I'm just kind of like,
Yeah,
I was not impressed.
Yeah.
It doesn't really look – I like documentaries, but this just doesn't – I know that the movie industry runs on product placement.
Yeah.
So it's not like any secret that, anything that Morgan Spurlock's going to come out and be like, hey, everybody, just so you know, movies are made because products pay to have their – companies pay to have their products movies. It's like, yeah, we know that.
Yeah, I think that's probably common knowledge. Maybe, and again, I haven't seen the documentary, but maybe it's just like we're supposed to be surprised at to the extent, to which it goes. But I'm not really sure.
Sure.
But I can't see that being that great of a film and a greatly reviewed movie.
Yeah, that's what drives it. That's just kind of like I don't understand. I obviously haven't seen it yet, so maybe it is better than what it looks like, but. These
and I think so.
Glowing, like,
yeah.
Well, best movie of the year, and I'm like, I don't know, guys. I don't know if I can trust that. It doesn't really look that good.
I would say the only movie that I think product placement is really actually made it better was the Transformers films, and that was because they got access to a crazy amount of vehicles that they could destroy for real.
Yeah.
like, they were like, oh, so what kind of cards do you need? We'll give you all the cards of our competitors as long as you crush them. And then all the heroes can be our vehicles.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's a good point.
I think clearly Demolition Man with Sylvester Stallone is like the high point because the characters go to a Taco Bell, and Taco Bell has been switched over from the crappy establishment it is today into like a glorious steak type of place where that's like the highbrow place that people go. So
if you want to see a crazy movie with product placement, like, seriously, I don't think I've ever seen a movie with so much product placement before in my life. Josie and the Pussycats was just riddled with product placement. Every scene was product placement. I think Target was in every scene of that movie.
They had to make a deal with the devil just to get enough money to make that movie, apparently.
Exactly. there's not that many great films coming out, but I don't know. Out of all of those, Water for Elephants will probably be one I go check out.
Yeah, you know, it's Easter weekend, so there's not, like, a ton of stuff that's really...
Yeah, maybe I'll go see Scream 4 for a third time. I don't know. So...
Well, you can enjoy it enough for the both of us, man.
Sounds good. I will. And with that... Let's kind of bring this podcast to an end, shall we? Okay. Before we do this, why don't you, Ben Tiberius, why don't you plug your podcast while we're here before we go into some of the other little things?
Oh, sure. Tiberius, go ahead.
Oh, all right. Well, aside from this podcast, I'm also the host of the Napier's Newscast. You can find us on Twitter or at napiersnews.com, or on Twitter at napiersnewscast. So, there you go.
Yeah, and you guys can track the other podcast down that I do at notjustnewmovies.com. It's called the Not Just New Movies Podcast. They're available in iTunes and here on geektyrant.com if you happen to be listening to it through the player embedded on the site. The most recent episode we did was about The Fountain, Darren Aronofsky's film. That was a pretty good one, so check it out. It's like episode 38, I think.
Cool. And make sure to visit our store, geektyrant.me. There you can find t-shirts and glasses and 3D, old school blue and red 3D glasses. Buy some stuff, help the site keep going. You can always subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Please do. Please leave us some reviews. Let us know what you think. Ask us questions. Criticize us. And constructive criticism, that is. And, yeah, just go ahead and do that. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geektyrantfans. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/geektyrant. And... like I said earlier, also subscribe to our YouTube page, youtube.com/geektyrant. Other than that, I think that closes this podcast. What do you guys think? Anything else anyone want to bring up? Are we good?
I think we're good.
All right.
Sounds good.
Well, take care, everybody. Thanks for listening. Venkman and the rest of the crew out.